You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, everybody. Welcome once again to the Wrestling Inc. podcast. I'm Glenn Rubenstein, and today we're going to talk about SmackDown Live for March 14th, 2017. I am joined, as always, by Wrestling Inc.'s own Raj Giri and special guest returning to the show, Dennis Farrell. Later in the show, we got Court Bauer coming up to talk about Wally Mania and what's coming up at WrestleMania in a couple weeks. But first, we're going to go after SmackDown Live for last night. So, Raj, top-level thoughts. What did you think of the show last night and the build towards Mania?
I thought the AJ Shane stuff was pretty good. You know, AJ, I feel like they could have done more for him to be angry directly at Shane as opposed to... you know, not at Daniel Bryan or why he's specifically mad at Shane. But being that what it was, it still was, I thought it was done really well. As far as the rest of the show, I thought it was pretty poor other than that.
And Dennis, how about you?
I can't agree with him more. The burying of America Alpha continues. I mean, they finally get TV time. And the most exciting thing during that match was a beat up Shane McMahon just staggering around backstage. They got to do more for American Alpha here.
I think it shows how far they've fallen when, you know, fans are chanting Angle. And granted, they knew that Kurt Angle was at the building, but still, you know, they're not into American Alpha as much as they really should be.
Yeah. Weird that they had Angle there and not doing anything on TV.
Well, it wasn't, you know, they usually don't do that when they have a Hall of Fame inductee. They don't have him appear on TV unless it's an active wrestler like Jerry Lawler or Ric Flair. Mm-hmm. So he was there doing stuff with Daniel Bryan for social media. That's going to be out soon.
I really liked at the beginning how Daniel Bryan was on the phone and they didn't specify who he was talking to, but he was like, yeah, and we got that coming up later. Yeah, and Becky versus Natalya. I thought that was a clever way to sort of tease the show. But then from there, it just really dragged in the non-AJ Shane stuff. And yeah, that was interesting during American Alpha versus the Usos to have like the Shane cam backstage with everything going on. It was just a weird night. I did highly enjoy talking smack afterwards, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So, yeah, we started with AJ coming to the ring, cutting a promo, talking about he was looking for Shane. All his list of grievances, everything that he thinks bad that has happened to him pretty much since he had the title last summer. And commentary last night, JBL and Tom Phillips. No Otunga, no Moro. That was... different. I mean, so we're to believe that it's true Otunga's actually shooting some sort of film and Moro was stuck in the snow?
Yeah, I mean, Moro tweeted about it the night before that he might have a tough time getting there because of the blizzard. Otunga is filming a movie, so that's all true. I mean, you know, I think if they were switching to a two-man booth, I don't think they'd do it quite as, you know, drastically as they, you know, as one week go from four to two, but
yeah.
But yeah, that's all true.
I feel like we're using movie a little too hard here. I think we should add straight to DVD probably to this guys, right?
It wasn't his last thing. One of those Adam Sandler Netflix movies with Rikishi. I mean, I think that's what it was the last time Otunga was out because he was doing a movie. That was when he came back and was like, I was talking to Rikishi on the set of a movie the other day. And people were like, what in the hell are David Otunga and Rikishi doing in a movie?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, he's got a few movies that he's actually working on right now, but yeah, I mean, nothing really big.
Huh. Okay. So we went from that promo, Becky Lynch versus Natalya.
Good. Can I say one thing though about the AJ? I really enjoyed him just coming out, not doing the pomp and circumstance thing, walking straight to the ring. And you could tell the crowd was a little thrown off because there wasn't a lot of crowd reaction as he just beelined it straight to the ring.
Yeah, Raj, what did you think of that, of AJ? I mean, I thought AJ had some valid points from his perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was kind of one of those deals where you agree with everything he's saying, so you're kind of on his side, you know? And he doesn't really come across as the heel. It kind of reminded me of Bret Hart when he was first turning heel. And, you know, he would make a lot of valid points. Even he was justified with what he was saying. But, you know, the fans were supposed to be against him. But that wasn't really the case tonight, you know? Fans seemed to be on AJ's side. So AJ, you know, outside of AJ, like I said, this show was no good.
Here's what I picture happening with a lot of these wrestlers. I think at some point when all of these things, you know, all of these grievances and transgressions occur, they finally can say, you know what, I'm going to go to Vince, I'm going to lay it out. And they go in there and they lay it out to Vince like this, that. And Vince goes, you're right, that's good. That will be your promo when we actually give you the push. We'll take right. this. I think that's how it always comes about. Vince sort of deflecting when people come and just get angry with him.
It may, well, I don't think that's the case here because, you know, you look at AJ's out of character interviews and he just sounds like the nicest, you know, most happy to be here guy. Again, I think there should have been more to get him that upset at Shane to justify him throwing him through a car door window. Like maybe Shane should have came out and, you know, AJ demand that he have something at Mania. Shane come out and say, sorry, you're off this year's show. We just don't have a spot for you. And that would, you know, that could drive him to be really angry at Shane.
And let's not forget a few weeks ago, it was Shane McMahon that's like, I think AJ should go, you know, both were the. So to me, there's a lot of inconsistencies here. I'm kind of with Raj here. There needed to be one more tipping point that really made AJ mad. And I just didn't see it.
I don't think Shane is the heel in this situation.
He's not supposed to be. Yeah. AJ's supposed to be the heel.
Yeah. So it's just, I think that's the thing. I think the crowd likes both of them. That's going to make for an interesting match. Because, AJ definitely had the crowd support last night. So Becky versus Natalya. This was kind of a throwback to a match we saw 20 times last year. Raj, how do you think it stacked up?
It was there. You know, I found myself just kind of tuning out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was there. I like both of them. I think they could really go, but when you have a match that means nothing and you've seen it a bunch of times, it's hard to get into it.
Yeah, Dennis?
It was there. It didn't progress any of the storylines. This close to Mania, I feel like every moment on live TV should be building towards something, and there were way too many just throwaway matches on this SmackDown that really left me going, why did I just spend 2 hours watching this, guys?
Well, it's because they had the big production storyline going on. I mean, they really hung the show on that backstage beatdown.
And the problem is when they do these multi-person matches at WrestleMania, like when they do with the Intercontinental title the last couple of years, their matches leading into Mania are just those guys in that match just trading wins. And so that's what you're going to see with the women's, you know, matches. It's just them all trading wins until they have their match at WrestleMania.
Yeah. I mean, it's really just, it feels to me like we're just on rails at this point. I mean, with everything that's happening, it's all coming together. This is everything that we've heard rumored for weeks is just now slowly being peeled back to reveal like, oh, hey, that thing we heard about, it's actually happening. After the match, Carmella did beat down Natalya and Becky there with, why was James Ellsworth holding his neck during that?
I think he's still hurt from Cena. I don't know.
Yeah, I think selling last week's match.
Just selling. Okay. So yeah, that was your big surprise moment last night, the two of them popping out. Then we saw AJ backstage waiting for Shane. Again, you'd think someone would have given Shane a heads up, right? We have the camera kind of AJ and it might be like, oh, hey, Shane, someone might call and be like, by the way, AJ is looking for you. He's really pissed off. Be careful when you arrive at the building.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally. I thought the same thing. Like they should have brought in more security for Shane saying like, hey, AJ's upset. You know
who I really blame is the cameraman. The cameraman's sitting there seeing it all. You don't think he could be holding the camera going, over here, look over here. I mean, blame the camera guy, really.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's a sign of your leadership. If you're the boss and someone attacks you and is beating you down and none of the other employees make an effort to come to your defense, you might want to question your management style at that point. You know, not a single person is like, oh, hey, let's tear them off.
How many times do we have to listen to Fit Finley yell, you know, call, get the paramedics? Like, we got it the first 8 times, buddy.
Oh, man. Okay, so we'll go over that even further in depth in a few moments. But first, Maryse and The Miz came out, gave their list of grievances, setting up their WrestleMania match against John Cena and Nikki Bella. So, Dennis, what did you think of this in contrast to what we saw last week with what The Miz did on Talking Smack? How do you think this played out as far as just keeping the momentum going for this match?
It's tough because I wasn't a fan of the match to begin with, so it's just keeping my head above float. I'm a big Miz fan. I think Maryse by far was great on the mic, and it seems like they're really trying to push this the Cena Nikki loving each other a little too much on us. Like when they flash back to him and then, you know, they're all spinning each other around in the ring. I'm like, yeah, that seems like something that they do to make me believe that they really love each other or that they're really together. And I get that they are, but it just seems like they're really trying to push that fact that, hey, these two are an item, even though he didn't come to her defense when she was getting down with the steel, beaten down with the steel pipe. And even though we haven't seen or heard any mention on live TV about these two as a couple, now all of a sudden it's being forced upon me. You know, Miz and Maryse are kind of a natural couple.
Yeah, I think this feud is great when it's just the Miz talking. I thought once you had Maryse and Nikki Bella talking and that backstory, it just seemed like the crowd didn't care. I didn't care. And I know they use the same storyline on Total Divas, but it just died as soon as Maryse and Nikki Bella started going back and forth.
Well, you know, it was complicated. It was a complicated backstory Maryse was trying to give there. Normally, these feuds are built on, again, we've talked before, like, you think you're the best? I'm the best. You're a fake. You're a phony. But Maryse is like, back when they went to do the first season of Total Divas, they approached me. They approached her. She came to me as my best friend and said, no, wait, let's hold out for more money. It was much more complicated with Maryse and her accent trying to sell it to an arena than a lot of these feuds.
Yeah, and I like when you have a backstory as opposed to just throwing two people out there for no reason. But it shouldn't have been all explained right off, you know, right in one segment. You could have done like a sit down where you kind of tell the backstory or, you know, some other way than going out and cutting a long promo that the people really didn't care about.
You know, the Miz and Cena are just enough by themselves to really push the storyline. And then you kind of have the women get involved. I could have bought that. They don't need to have their own backstory to progress this feud. I think they're pushing that too much onto us. The Miz and Cena, you know, the Miz, Cena's holding me down. Cena's this guy. That's enough in itself. Let's build more on that.
The Miz did have a funny line in this. What was there was something where he's like, you can't cut this promo off, or you can't tell us when to go off the air, or who do you think you are, John Cena? It's something like that.
Yeah. Make matches. That was it.
Oh yeah, you can't make matches. Who do you think you are, John Cena? So you know, Miz is the MVP of this feud. John Cena's just kind of been there. Maryse and Nikki. Maryse, you know, her delivery on everything was good. It just was way too long. It was too much to explain, and it's something the crowd didn't care about.
Yeah, I think they need to protect Maryse with these promos more and let her do it on Talking Smack, let her do it backstage, because, I mean, she held her own very well in front of the crowd, but I think that you could tell the crowd was starting to turn until she dropped bitch at the end, and everyone was like, whoa, we love swearing.
Yeah, that's how on SmackDown, every woman's feud. That's how you know when it's getting heated.
But the star of that segment, though, I think was Daniel Bryan when he came out at the end and talked about how much he wants to punch Miz in the face and just listed off his grievances. And then made the match for Mania. I thought that was a great button punchline to the whole thing.
Right. No, I agree.
3 minutes too late. I mean, the women really drug that down. And then when they brought Daniel Bryan out, I had to kind of snap back in and go, oh, I'm interested again. So I felt like if they could have brought him out just a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes earlier, I'd have been like, whoa, this is cool.
Yeah. So we went from that to Mickie James versus Alexa Bliss. And Dennis, thoughts?
Yeah. Once again, see my recent comments for the first women's match of the night. It was just there. I kind of watched it with my wife, and she made a couple funny comments I won't repeat on this podcast about Mickie James, and we giggled and waited for the next match.
Rosh?
You know, so Alexa, you know, brings Mickey back. They're aligned for a while. And then their first match is just this throwaway match on SmackDown. Felt like there should have been, if you're going to do their first matchup, have it build more. Because this just felt like complete filler when there was enough backstory that it shouldn't have been. But yeah, it was just, you know, it was back to the women just trading wins.
Yeah. Yeah. Mickey won. So, I mean, it's really setting it up. I think the possibility that it's championship is anyone's for the taking.
I'm guessing Alexa keeps getting beat until WrestleMania and walks out as champ.
Yeah.
Unless Naomi's able to come back.
Yeah. So backstage, again, AJ waiting backstage for Shane. Renee Young interviews AJ while he's waiting backstage for Shane. No one thinks to give Shane a heads up. Car pulls in. Shane just gets attacked, thrown through a car window. The beatdown went on for a good 2 or 3 minutes before Fit Finley came in and finally broke it up. AJ comes back, gets in another shot. And yeah, this really sets it all up with Daniel Bryan firing AJ afterwards. But so let's talk about the beatdown itself. Raj, what'd you make of the segment? How'd you think it was pulled off?
I thought it was really well done. And not to belabor the point, I still think there should have been more provocation for AJ to be that upset. But I thought it was really well done. The car window thing was a nice touch. I didn't like that Shane was, you know, up and standing and moving around so soon after, but it was fine. He was acting pretty concussed and beaten down backstage. So I thought this was the best thing on the show. Really the only, I can't think of anything else. I thought this was the only good thing on the show.
Yeah. Dennis?
I agree. You know, the only nitpicky complaint I had was that blood flow seemed a lot more urgent when they came back from the cut. From the, was it a commercial or another match? When they came back, all of a sudden that thing was like flowing. And I thought, man, you know, maybe a little nitpicky there. I was okay with just that little bit of blood the first few seconds after he went through. I thought, all right, he's going to come back. But the beating itself was real old school. Like, I really felt like I was watching Attitude Era wrestling again. I had a smile on my face. It was a great throwback segment. You know, you were waiting for Stone Cold to come running in and throw some cement in someone's. It was great. I thought this was a great throwback. I enjoyed it.
I will say some of our commenters in the YouTube chat are saying this, and I agree. I thought the camera inside the car part.
Well, yeah. My wife was like, who has a camera inside their car for no reason? And it was like the third car in line, so it didn't really belong to anybody either.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was the moment that took me out of it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
But I think other than that, it was produced well. Although they did the same thing. How many times did they reshow it on SmackDown throughout the night? And then they showed the whole thing again in its entirety on Talking Smack. I mean, you could tell WWE was very proud of this. They wanted to make sure people saw it. But I thought they less is more in these cases. And I think the WWE has a tendency to replay things maybe two or three times too many sometimes.
All right, but yeah, it was well done. And it's obviously they think this is probably, in a lot of ways, this might be the most important SmackDown match. I think people care about this more than Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton and more than The Miz and John Cena The Miz and Maurice against John Cena and Nikki Bella. So, you know,
yeah,
this is kind of their main event.
So Daniel Bryan fired AJ, which was an interesting wrinkle in the whole thing. Odd for him also to keep saying, like, I think he's the best wrestler in the company, but I'm getting rid of him. It's like, you know.
My guess is that Shane is going to say, if you want your job back, you got to beat me. You know, like it's not a, but then again, they still have a bunch of live events, so they'll have to explain that, which, I mean, they could say he's contractually obligated to those. But my guess is that it leads to a stip at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
As opposed to just Shane saying, all right, I'm bringing you back, you know, a week later.
So interesting match following all that they followed with was Mojo Rawley versus Dolph Ziggler. I thought this could have actually been better on a different night. Mojo won by countout, but I can't even say with a straight face. What do you guys think of the match? I mean, it was just really there, right? Meant to be there.
It's like trying to push what a stipulation of a battle royal is. And I think anyone that's been watching wrestling, you know, knows that you win by throwing the person over the top. So this, I mean, this just sucked.
Yeah. I didn't really need to hear JBL tell me 8 times. He'd have been eliminated 3 times already. Like, he did it. We understand.
It's like when they over-explain the triple threat match, how the champion doesn't have to get pinned to lose, and they just do that over and over. We're like, yes, we get it.
Dear wrestling fan.
It rarely happens, too. But anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so Randy came out, gave his more of his explanation of why he burned down.
Again.
Yeah. Okay, so laid out the plan again of what he was doing with Bray Wyatt the whole time. Burning down the shack, burning Sister Abigail. But then, aha, Bray appears. Sister Abigail was not, her remains were not burned. Or they were, but Bray's going to baptize himself with her ashes. That was a interesting visual we got there. Further setting up the match for Mania. I mean, what did you think, Raj, of the storytelling here and how this builds the match?
I just find this stuff so hokey. I think part of it is Randy Orton. I think his acting is just terrible. You know, people get on my case about my criticism of Randy Orton. And, you know, when I called out last week, like, when was the last time Randy Orton had a great match? And people were going back years. And I thought his promo, it just sounds like he's reading a script for an improv class, or, you know, like an acting class. Oh, I thought it sucked. I thought the Wyatt stuff is just silly. I didn't like the burning down of the compound. I thought that was too hokey for me. So, you know, I like storylines in wrestling, but I like when they're believable.
Yeah, Dennis.
Bray Wyatt is saving this whole feud for me. After they burnt down the compound, I was really afraid that they would bring Bray back and make him look weak and be beleaguered and just, you know, now he's there for the taking. They really bounced back and made me believe that Bray, you made Bray stronger. Bray delivered a great promo, which made me go, all right, this didn't end Bray. It made him stronger. He used, you know, tragedy to make what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But I think Raj is right. You know, Randy, Bray, I'm going to screw you. And it's that slow, methodical delivery. He's not playing the Randy Orton character that he has played the 10, 11 years that we've seen him. I don't know what character we're watching or what, you know, evolve of Randy Orton that this is, but I don't like it. I don't know if this is a heel or a face or what it is, but I don't like this Randy Orton. This Randy Orton that I'm watching is totally killing this. This could be a great setup, but Randy Orton's acting abilities is, you know, with a Tonga right now and straight to DVD.
Yeah, this was no 12 rounds too, that's for sure. but no, I think, I don't know. I expected something a little different. I mean, this whole feud, right, has just been sort of these vague platitudes and motivations. They've each been repeating again and again. I would have liked to have seen something new. You know, I mean, I think we joked about it last week, but it's like with Sister Abigail's remains gone. I mean, is Bray going to come out looking like his dad, like IRS and Clark Kent mode that, oh, you know, he's not possessed anymore. Something, anything, something different. But instead, this was just like on a loop of the same stuff they spout.
Right. And Veggie Gamer in the YouTube comments is pointing out that Randy Orton is saying he's Jake the Snake Roberts. And that is totally what I thought is he's like trying to copy Jake and just cannot do it.
No,
you know, the slow methodical promos, but you know, Jake did those and he was just awesome at them, and Randy not so much.
I'll say this, I like the fact that they toned down the production this week on that video, that it was more raw, dirty, kind of dark. It wasn't what we saw when Bray burnt down the compound, overproduced, weird music. That's how that first video should have been.
It's really tough to sell a dude rubbing himself with dirt just all over his face, you know, saying that's tough mode. So let's wrap up SmackDown. Just talk quickly. American Alpha versus the Usos getting buried by the backstage cam that was happening the whole time. I mean, this match went on a long, long time. And I think it was just so they could keep building up what Shane was going to do in coming out. I actually thought, you know, I would like to see a match like this get some proper attention and build up. But the real punchline to this was just Shane coming out and saying, you know, AJ wants a match at WrestleMania. Now he's got one against him. So we got that. And from there, we went to talking smack. I mean, what did you think about ending that note, essentially giving this main event as, I mean, literally the main event as filler for this button that Shane came and put out on the episode Rush?
I guess I'm fine with it because you don't want to have an important match and then they're, you know, keep cutting away from it for it. But I'd rather they did something else because, you know, American Alpha has been, you know, working the dark match or, you know, main event or whatever for the last couple of weeks. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's just sad to see what's happened to American Alpha. I didn't, you know, the Usos beating them, it keeps it going. I don't think they should have beaten the Usos here. But yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, they were one of the people at NXT that fans were really excited about to get on the main roster.
Yeah. Yeah, Vince is getting his revenge on the whole thing. Quickly talking smack, did you guys watch it last night?
I did, not this week.
I did, yeah.
I thought the women, when all the women showed up, I thought that was by far the highlight of the entire thing.
Geez. I thought it was so predictable, like they're taking their cue lines to come out next.
But it was good timing. I mean, like, just, okay, remove it from wrestling for a second. Like, that was an example, I think, of them doing comedy well and how they kept doing with the one-up cycle and the back and forth and the trading of barbs. I mean, I thought it was very entertaining. I'm thinking about it now. I mean, aside from making the match of Mania, confirming it, what else even happened on Talking Smack last night?
Gosh, who else was on? You know, Daniel Bryan talked about Kurt Angle being there. They did for social media.
Made a very off color joke about James Ellsworth and the Bailey buddies. If you read between the lines on it, wow. I can't believe Daniel keeps getting away with that every week. No one's like, dude, just cool it with talking about, you know, Ellsworth's endowment. but no, I thought Talking Smack Talking Smack last night with was more entertaining than most of SmackDown was.
Yeah, absolutely. It usually is. I mean, I take that back. SmackDown's, you know, usually a lot better, but.
Can I ask you this before I run? I got to get going here in a second, guys. But
yeah,
could another couple of these SmackDowns really derail, you know, their contribution? And not, it's going to be there for WrestleMania, but could it really kill how we feel about WrestleMania going forward and then SmackDown afterwards? I mean, SmackDown has been the MVP of the WWE right now, basically the A show, and it just seems like for whatever reason, whatever role they were on, hit a wall, and this could be bad news for SmackDown going forward.
Yeah, I think it's because they're trying now with the brand split to build up all of these stories towards Mania. So they have this very clear destination endpoint and they can't divert from it too much. And so I feel like with Raw and SmackDown for the next couple weeks, we're going to see the same thing where it's just a lot of filler in between their tent poles, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Someone bringing up how Daniel Bryan brought up Donald Trump and how he wins arguments. Yeah. You know, you gotta think Vince probably wouldn't be too happy with that. All right. But thanks again, Dennis. Thanks for joining us this week, man. And we'll see you back here again.
I'll be here when you need me. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care, man.
Yeah, so let's talk about what's coming up for Mania. We're going to have Court Bauer joining us in a moment. So, Raj, what's Court going to be talking about?
Well, Wale Mania 3. It's the third year that they've done it. It's kind of like a kickoff to WrestleMania party, really. There's usually tons of wrestlers there. I went the last couple of years, and it's a blast. You know, you have Wale spinning. You got tons of guys. I mean, last year, Scott Hall was there, Rey Mysterio, Jim Ross, Kevin Sullivan, Conan, Samoa Joe. I mean, it's just a huge list. Actually, Samoa Joe was the year before. But last year, Big E was there. It's a ton of fun. Definitely, you got to check it out. It's a fun way to start off the weekend. Real quick, did you get to see the NXT UK poster that
no I didn't yet. Is that where the buzz is coming right now about what's up with Shinsuke?
Yeah So Triple H tweeted a poster for the so NXT will be at the Download Festival in the UK again this year. They were there last year, and yeah, front and center is, you got Bobby Roode, you got Asuka, you know, Sanity, some other guys, but no Shinsuke Nakamura. So it's definitely gotten people talking, like a main roster debut is coming up.
Interesting. Well, we shall see. I mean, if any time, right? The night after Mania. Hey, before Court gets here, let's take a moment and thank the sponsor of this episode, DDPY. You've heard us talk about DDP yoga and the amazing thing it's done for people's health, for people's bodies. Guys like Chris Jericho, Mick Foley, AJ Styles, Goldust, and other WWE superstars who love using DDPY. For a limited time, DDP is having a Hall of Fame sale where you can get DDPY DVDs for 30% off. And that includes 3 months of full access to the DDP Yoga Now app, or if digital only, you can get the DDP Yoga Now app for 30% off. You can also buy a Max or Combo pack at 30% off and get 50% off the second one. This offer expires on April 1st when DDP goes into the Hall of Fame. Sign up now at ddpyoga.com/wrestlinginc. That's ddpyoga.com/wrestlinginc to take advantage of the special offer. And we congratulate Diamond Dallas Page for being part of the 2017 WWE Hall of Fame class. It's going to be great. God, Shinsuke on the main roster. I'm so excited for that, but also very nervous about what's going to happen.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think joining us is Court. Court, can you hear us? I think you're on mute right now.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Hey, Court. How you doing?
Not bad. You guys ready for WrestleMania in 2 weeks?
Ready as ever.
Man, it's weird when you say 2 weeks. I'm like, dang, that's really coming up soon.
It's the promoter in me. You know, you have this internal clock. When's your event? You know, for me, it's 15 days for Wally Mania and then a few more days for WrestleMania on April 2nd. But this is the crunch period and the road to WrestleMania and all things in Orlando. And what are you guys thinking of the card, the main event?
You know what? I actually think this year's WrestleMania is a lot stronger than last year's. I know a lot of people hate the amount of part-timers, and I think that's a very valid argument that occupy the top matches. But as far as matches that are interesting, at least on some level, I think it's way more interesting than last year. I thought last year's card was kind of a dud.
Yeah, it's interesting where they booked Brock Lesnar in this thing compared to last year against Dean Ambrose. And to me, it's kind of shocking to see how Dean Ambrose and his stock has kind of slid since last year's WrestleMania, where he was being positioned as the top guy with the championship. And now he seems to have fallen a few paces down to the Intercontinental Champion, but really not a focus for this year's WrestleMania. And I kind of can track it back to this one big moment where I think there was a light bulb moment for WWE, and it's during that Steve Austin podcast. And Steve Austin had some constructive criticism for him, and I think everyone in the back, the light bulb went off, and they were like, "Yeah, that's true." And since then, I don't think he's upped his game.
Yeah, do you think there is any heat on Steve for that as well? Because he hasn't done any podcast since then, you know, with WWE. I mean, he's had WWE stars on his.
No. No heat on Steve over that. I think that was just I think that was the last one he was contractually obligated to do.
Yeah. And I think from a business point, it makes sense, right? I mean, why does WWE want to keep promoting all the stuff that Podcast One owns when they could be working on their own stuff for the network?
Well, no, not that. I mean, Austin's done other podcasts with WWE stars. I mean, like, it's,
you know, they're on good terms. There was no weirdness from that, but it was an aha moment for the back, where I think a lot of people in the office when talking to them were like, yeah, you know, Steve kind of hit it about Dean Ambrose, you know, and he feels like if you watched him, has he regressed? Has he pushed forward? Is it kind of like his offense kind of a cliche now? To me, it is, and I think he's really talented, and I haven't seen him evolve as a talent. Frankly, the only guy with the Shield I've seen really up his game has been Seth Rollins, and he's been injured, but you can see he's constantly trying to reimagine himself. His offense is always unique. You never say a Seth Rollins match is cliche, and you know you can see that rebound spot and clothesline like you do with Dean Ambrose. But, I'm not knocking Dean Ambrose. I love the guy. I just wish he was in a better spot, but I think he kind of has himself to blame this year.
Yeah, I know when he was WWE champion, and even right after he lost it, was at the top. A lot of the older generation I talked to, the one guy that they'd criticize the most was Dean Ambrose. They wouldn't criticize Kevin Owens because they would talk about Ambrose's look and how he presented himself as champion, but they wouldn't say that about Owens. And they just did not like how Ambrose was performing as champ and the way he carried himself. And he just wasn't presenting himself as a top guy. And I wonder how much of that has to do with the script and environment of WWE and where what they see his character as being, as opposed to where he could take it if the handcuffs were off a little bit.
Yeah, but it's also, you reach a certain point where you can have a two-way conversation, you know, and when you become world champion, you have that opportunity to do so. You look at CM Punk, he pushed back, and you that's your privilege when you get to that point.
Yeah,
Vince values you, but he also expects you to continue to push forward, and he doesn't want a guy that's kind of in neutral. And I think that you kind of saw that with Dean Ambrose through the end of 2016 and into 2017. And nothing says that more than how you're slotted at WrestleMania. You kind of know your worth to Vince McMahon based on how you're slotted. And that can either create some pushback if you want to go to them and say, hey, I'm really not even factored into this. What the hell? Or you can, you know, just go long, roll with the punches. And then it's like you're in quicksand if you do that.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of interesting with the SummerSlam, you know, SmackDown main event was Dean Ambrose versus Dolph Ziggler for the WWE Championship. And now you got Ziggler in the Battle Royal. Ambrose, if he does face Baron Corbin for the Intercontinental title, if they do announce it, that's most likely going to be on the kickoff show. So it's a big, big fall down the card.
Yeah, it's a fall from grace. And sometimes you got to get there and show it in the ring, but also be right outside Vince's door, knocking on his door and pitching new ideas and explaining what you want to do to up your game. If he doesn't see you that you want it, and he said it on the Steve Austin podcast to plug a WWE Network show again, but you know, he's waiting for guys to grab that brass ring. And I think for some guys, they are kind of mystified. How do you do that? And you got to show in a lot of different ways to Vince. And John Cena to me is the best example of that. The guy is just, give me more to do. Give me more to do. And I'm constantly in his work ethic. It's exceptional.
Now, Court, when you were booking, you know, when you were a producer with WWE, mm-hmm. And it was WrestleMania time, obviously a lot of people can't get on the card. What is the reaction backstage as far as people worrying about if they're going to get a slot on WrestleMania? Do people try to come up with ways that they could be on the card, or do they just kind of sit and wait to see where they're placed, if they're placed?
Oh, man, I'll tell you, Kurt Angle, who's going to the Hall of Fame, of course, this year, now he was in a position at one WrestleMania where, you know, he wanted a good long run with the belt, and he was telling anyone and everyone, like he was running for office, that, trust me, let me run with this belt. I want to be your guy. I mean, he was politicking, but he really believed he was the right person for business, for WWE, for the SmackDown brand at the time, to be the guy. And so, I mean, he was very intense and very focused on being not just in the main event for that WrestleMania, but coming out of that WrestleMania as champion, because he saw it as such a significant thing. And that passion really resonates with the office. It really resonates with the McMahon family. And there are some guys that are a little bit more laid back, and they can find themselves with success too. But when it comes to the ring, you can't be laid back. You got to bring it. There are always guys that are going to be pushing for a better slot. And there's going to be guys that have the boo-boo face when they don't have that spot. And there's going to be guys that are motivated and maybe have an undercard match, and they're going to shove it up the office's ass and give them a good match, like a really star-stealing or show-stealing match. That happens too. It's how you convert that negative into a positive. That sounds cheesy, but it's really a lot of that's what it comes down to a lot of the time.
Yeah, and when you were there working, you know, is it creative pitching ideas for matches to Vince, or Vince telling creative, this is where we're going, work on getting there?
Up a little bit.
Oh, sorry. I was saying, how much of the WrestleMania card when you were there was creative pitching ideas for matches to Vince, and how much of it was Vince telling the creative team, this is what we're going to do and get us there?
Sometimes Vince will have his match locked, and one of those examples was, you know, a special attraction with Donald Trump. He didn't know exactly how we were going to get there, and that's where he opened up the floor to suggestions. Sometimes you get pitched an idea, or Vince will get pitched an idea from talent, and it's a really compelling idea, and they're on board, and sometimes Vince will go in that direction, and other times it's a collaborative thing. It's really kind of a mashup of all of the above that I just mentioned.
Awesome. Well, so me and Glenn, before you came on, we were talking about Wally Mania. You know, I've been there the last couple of years. It's yes. just it's a blast. Really fun way to kick off WrestleMania week. And especially if you're an adult, you know, if you're of age, this is the perfect way. You know, you got Wally spinning, the partying, tons of wrestlers there. I think last year I saw Alberto Del Rio, Mark Henry, Chris Jericho,
Big E,
yeah, Noel. I Big E was leaving when I got in. He actually took my Uber.
But, and then Enzo Amore actually freestyled on the mic with Wale on stage later on. So you know, it's like the scene out of Star Wars. It's the Mos Eisley Cantina, where it's like everyone from around the wrestling universe kind of converges for a little bit, and the night starts off with a meet and greet. And this year it's going to be the stars from New Japan, Ricochet and Will Ospreay, who are just killing it in their junior heavyweight division. And they're also sending us the Bullet Club's Tama Tonga and Tagaloa, former two-time IWGP Tag Team Champions. And then George Carroll, who's overseeing the U.S. expansion, will be in the house. And we're going to do, after the meet and greet, around 9 o'clock, you can, for GA tickets, just $15, join us for the live podcast part. And the after party and Wally performance. But the live podcast will go about 2 hours. And during that, we're going to have a panel. Dave Meltzer will be on that panel. Jim Ross will be on that panel. I'll be on that panel. New Japan guys will be on that panel. Tons of random run-ins, probably like in Dallas and in San Jose, where we had guys like Samoa Joe pop up and Scott Hall. It was crazy. We'll be talking this time about New Japan's expansion into the United States. We'll have some exclusive news on that. And then when you start that almost Wale Rumble style, anyone can show up and chime in on the podcast. You just never know who's going to pop in and say whatever. I remember Biggie was pretty funny, and he said, I'm not going to say anything too controversial because I don't want to get fired before WrestleMania. And he popped the room. And then we'll do a fan Q&A with everyone on stage. So whoever's there on stage, you know, you can have an opportunity to ask some crazy random people from Japan to maybe even WWE, you never know, a question. And it's a really, really fun environment. And after that, then Jamie Iovine's going to be our DJ for the after party, to the Vegas style after party. And then Wale will perform. And then you just see wrestlers hanging. If you've ever heard about wrestlers hanging at a nightclub or bar in the stories, that's kind of how this is. It's a lot of fun. And we just put a limited amount of meet and greet tickets on sale at MLW.com. We have just a handful. It's going to sell out. If you want to get a ticket and do the meet and greet thing, it starts a little bit before the live podcast at 6:30. The event's on Thursday, March 30th. Get those tickets at MLW.com or on Eventbrite, and it should be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. It's at Tier Nightclub right downtown in Orlando. Super convenient. It's like 2 blocks from the Amway Center, and it's a great kick-in.
And last year, actually, I think the last couple of years, it sold out pretty fast. So if don't wait to get your tickets. Jump in and get them now.
Yeah, this is our biggest nightclub we've run. We keep getting bigger and bigger. This year, it's like 3 times the size of Dallas. So, you know, we sold out our meet and greet tickets in the first 2 hours. They went on sale in November. And then just yesterday, we kind of quietly, low-key announced that we were going to be putting tickets on sale. So they're on sale right now. Just a handful of extra meet and greet tickets. So grab them. You don't want to miss a meet and greet. You get to get an autograph. You get to take a picture with the guys. And it should be a lot of fun. And then you get you'll have seats for the live podcast. GA, you never know what's going to be available. So it's another luxury getting that ticket.
Awesome. And like I said, it's a blast. I really urge everyone to check it out. I haven't decided if I'm going to Orlando this year, just because the last couple of years have been so crazy regarding maintaining the site while being there for WrestleMania. But I'll definitely be at Wally Mania 3 if I'm there. I did want to ask you, you know, MLW Radio is working with New Japan to presenting this, as far as, you know, the New Japan stars being there. And as someone that has followed New Japan for so long, what are your thoughts on Shinsuke Nakamura being in NXT for a year? Chances are he'll probably be moving the main roster shortly, if not the night after WrestleMania, shortly after that. Mm-hmm. But a guy like Shinsuke Nakamura, who's you know, been working classic matches forever, at his age, to keep him in NXT for a year.
It's a conversation of serving two masters, because I would have preferred he would have been instantly called up like AJ Styles was. And quickly they went from not giving him the mic to giving him the title for a good run with John Cena. Nakamura would have knocked it out of the park as well. But they're also trying to balance these different brands, and they needed someone on NXT to headline. And so Shinsuke Nakamura fell into that role. If you look at NXT promotional material for, say, June of 2017 for the UK tour that's come up, I did not see his face on the poster. It just went out. You see Eric Young. You see Bobby Roode. You see a lot of guys, but you don't see Shinsuke Nakamura, which tells me he's coming up, and it's probably happening before the draft, which I would think would be in June or July of this year. And that it's long overdue, but the clock is ticking. He's 36, and he has not just a bump card that's like anyone else. He has a bump card that includes MMA fights and a long career in New Japan. So it's like, let's get on with it. And he's already done great business in terms of merchandise sales. He's a guy that transcends. He has incredible charisma. It's a no-brainer, but again, I think it just comes down to they were moving talent around, and he was just slotted for that. That was his fate for 2016.
Guys, if you guys have questions for Court, feel free to leave them in the live chat or on our in the comment section. So you were there for that WrestleMania with Donald Trump, right?
I was.
So who approached Donald Trump about taking the stunner and having beer poured on him?
You know, Vince basically was the conduit for all things Trump. And unless you were there in the trenches and there was something going on TV, and it was pretty straightforward, but, you know, by the numbers, nothing. But Vince and Donald have a relationship that goes back, you know, 35 years at least. And so they got along great. And so, and Donald was game for anything. It was surprising to see that he was willing to even do the goofs on his hair and stuff. It was surreal going through it. And, you know, it's more surreal looking at what happened in November. And now we have a WWE Hall of Famer in the White House.
Yeah. Well, you kind of have two now, Linda McMahon as well.
Yeah. It's crazy when you see some of those photos that come out. And this is something I think that Vince has long wanted. And, you know, it's kind of like the Godfather, you know, it's that drive to go legit. And that's pretty legit when you're in the cabinet for any administration as part of the presidency.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. There was that photo that was tweeted out with the McMahons at the White House with Trump and Shane and Triple H and their kids. And it was pointed out that Stone Cold has stunned like 60% of the people in that photo. It was like the only adult that wasn't was Shane McMahon's wife.
Yeah, I love wrestling stats, especially when they're true. Yeah.
So as far as this year's WrestleMania, is there a match you're really most looking forward to?
This year, I'm looking forward to see what they do with Goldberg and Brock Lesnar, because I was there in the house for 20, and the most over guy in that match was Stone Cold Steve Austin. It was a really weird moment because the fans knew that these guys were checking out, one because his contract was over and it wasn't the most spectacular run, and the other had decided he was checking out on wrestling. So it was a weird lame duck match. This year, you kind of know Bill Goldberg's probably not sticking around too much longer. But Brock is your guy, and it'll be interesting to see how they tell that story, because to me, there's still a great babyface run of Brock Lesnar. I think that match will do a lot to add to the credibility of this new title that's got off on a rocky start with the Universal Championship. And after crowning a new champion at SummerSlam, another tie into our conversation on SummerSlam, 24 hours later, the title's vacated. And that's tough.
Right. And where do you think they should go with Brock after Mania, assuming he wins the title?
You know, I'd love to see Roman Reigns as a heel. I really would. I don't know if they'll ever do it, but if there was a time and having him establish as part of maybe Triple H's faction that seems to be slowly kind of being cobbled together, where you have Hunter, you have Kevin Owens perhaps, Samoa Joe, and then you have something like Roman Reigns add to that. That's a very compelling heel group that really solidifies it. And then if they're going against maybe Braun Strowman, who I could see being a big babyface for the company in 2017 and beyond, and Brock Lesnar is part-time, you kind of need faction to go against these monsters, because it just adds more depth and layers to what you can do on 3 hours of Raw. But also, there's constantly another hurdle and another stepping stone to get to the evil boss at the end of the video game, which I think they could do a very good job with Hunter there. And whoever's the guy at the end of that, that's, you know, toss up. That's a pretty loaded regime if they were to do something like that. But that's how I'd probably book it.
And as far as Nakamura to the main roster, which brand do you think could use him more?
Well, if you look at Raw, I would love to see him on SmackDown just in terms of pure matchups. But if you look at Raw, they really are going to need a shot in the arm. They're losing Chris Jericho probably before May. They're losing Goldberg at some point in April, May at the latest. Probably could be. I mean, I understand his contract is up at WrestleMania. But who's to say they don't tack on three matches or 3 weeks? Who knows? But let's say they're losing Goldberg, Jericho in that window. That's a big one. You're getting Finn Balor, and Shinsuke Nakamura coming back in. That will really give you a nice balance to the babyface side, especially with Brock Lesnar. Who is he? Is he a heel? Is he a babyface? Right now, he's kind of a tweener. On the flip side, John Cena is not going to be around much on SmackDown. You can make a debate. You can make a real good argument for him to be the guy that gets slotted in there as one of the top baby faces. I would love to see AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura on my TV screen every week. It's a match that would just, I think they can tell it differently every time. So it's a real toss-up. It just depends how things shake out and if everyone can stay healthy. And also, where does Triple H factor into all this? Because he's clearly going to be a focus now. Is he going to be a focus after WrestleMania? A little bit. How long? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. It seems like they're teasing a stable with Triple H, Owens, and Samoa Joe, but I just don't know if Triple H is interested in becoming a TV character, at least a weekly TV character again.
He's got a full plate and then some. And right. So, but he's at all the TVs. So, one segment on TV out of the 30 seconds they have, I don't think it's the end of the day for him. He'll do whatever's best for business, I guess, as they will say. But I like the idea of the faction, and he's either the end game of that equation, or the hype guy that once in a while get involved. But I think you can do a lot with that, a lot.
Yeah. And what do you think of how the build up for Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton is? I think there's a wide spectrum of opinions on this.
Interesting. That's a match that is such an odd match. There's just no – Bray Wyatt does a great job, gets a great reaction. They're both great wrestlers, but Randy Orton's promos feel ice cold. There's not that groundswell of support. When you watch him on SmackDown, you don't feel like a lot of – everyone pops always for the RKO, but you don't feel like there's this real momentum behind him as he chases the champion. You know, when a babyface is chasing the title and the top heel, what it feels like. This doesn't have much behind. There's not much steam behind it for whatever reason.
Yeah. Someone's asking, Court, what do you see how the state of pro wrestling will be in the next 3 years? And do you see Triple H taking over WWE full time?
Yeah, that's going to happen. It's just a matter of, when Vince decides to call it a day, and that day will probably be his last day on this earth, because right. That's just how Vince is. He's kind of like the Sumner Redstone of pro wrestling. Look at Sumner Redstone and Viacom's relationship. He's still fighting it out, even though he's doesn't have all his he doesn't have it all together anymore in his mid-90s. The next 3 years of wrestling, you're going to probably see a lot of trial and error when it comes to these companies coming up that offer streaming solutions, streaming subscriptions, and there'll be some companies that really benefit from that. You no longer just have to wait for that fairy dust from a network to make you into a big company. You now have streaming outlets, and it's still going to be a boutique product, but you're going to be a viable boutique product if you have something that's stable, if you have a good business model. New Japan World is one of those things where it has a healthy, small but healthy following in the United States. Over the next 3 years, if they can have some synergy with Access TV, which is in 50, 60, 70 million homes, and build this out to have an English component, they could have a very viable 1-2 punch with an OTT and with a network or cable network deal. And so I think they are best positioned to take advantages of the opportunities that are going to be in play in the next 4 years. Ring of Honor is, you know, their destiny is determined by senior management, Joe Koff, and the powers that be above Joe Koff at Sinclair Broadcasting. I probably think they're not going to, I think they're going to still be in the same position they are now, based just on, you know, you look at how they've tracked under current leadership, and I don't think they're going to do anything outrageous. They're risk averse, and they've been stable because of it. I think NXT is going to be an interesting one because, again, there's that balancing act. How do they play into the bigger picture? You know, they tried to tour Australia and New Zealand. They had to cancel some of those shows. They do their best business when they piggyback off of WWE's big pay-per-views and come in on a Saturday or Friday. They did okay on the first round of house shows last year, but softer on their second and third rounds to the market. So they're going to be probably dependent on who's involved with the company, like any company. I think New Japan has probably the best opportunities and has the best potential to break out in the next 3 years here in the United States. I have some questions about some companies being around in 2 or 3 years. I'm curious to see where Impact is in 2 to 3 years. They're in that restart phase, and so I don't want to judge them right now. I'm curious to see how they put it together. I think it'd be great for wrestling if they can find a way to blow this thing up. I just, you know, I saw the first show. I don't want to judge them on the first show. I want to see where they are in 6-8 weeks, and then you kind of know if this dog can hunt. But we'll see. If you look at wrestling 3-4 years ago and look where it's at today, it's pretty radical and different from, you know, what we saw at the network versus where NXT is at. New Japan coming into the scene, Lucha Underground kind of had a big splash and now has kind of been lost in the shuffle. Ring of Honor is that old slow and steady process. You know, they never do anything too radical or sexy, but when they do something, they do it pretty correct. So it's interesting to see where the business is headed.
Yeah, it does seem like if you were to count WWE and NXT as two different brands, you got WWE, NXT, and then, you know, kind of a big drop as far as in the U.S., for the battle for number three with ROH, Impact, New Japan on Access,
right.
Kind of all in this. There's a lot going on with all of them right now. But, you know, again, New Japan obviously does a lot of viewers in Japan. But domestically, it does seem like they got the most buzz of all those other groups kind of in that situation right now. And they are going to start touring in the U.S. this summer.
They have big time production. They have big time announcing, even on Access, with Jim Ross Hall of Fame, with Josh Barnett, who does a great job and has worked for New Japan as a wrestler, is a former UFC heavyweight champion, very credible in that position. And they're in more households than anyone but WWE by virtue of their Access TV deal. You add a second layer to that with their OTT. New Japan World has a huge subscription base. It's the second, it's only second to WWE. It's a big gap between first and second, but still, they're built to run. And if you look at the pay-per-view end, they had a really successful first show. It wasn't what I would say, you know, gangbusters, but they exceeded expectations by the pay-per-view company. So the pay-per-view companies look at them in a good way, whereas other companies, they're duds or they're just not interested. So they have a lot of good faith and goodwill from the fans to business partners, and their product speaks for itself. But big production, big time announcing, very polished production, and they're always top sellers. If you look at merchandise, another key metric, look at ProWrestlingTees.com. Look at some of their top sellers. It's Kenny Omega. It's New Japan gear. It's still Bullet Club stuff, Young Buck stuff. That tells you a lot. These guys can draw money, and I think they'll do very well in their pursuit of the United States.
Yeah. We'll get one last question. Someone's asking if we could ever see Triple H versus Shane McMahon. Now, you've obviously seen their relationship over the years. You think that's a match they would consider ever doing?
Can you repeat that?
Do you think WWE would ever, or Triple H or Shane McMahon would ever consider doing a program together?
Oh yeah, you know, with Vince, it's whatever. You know, if he can make money with something, he'll do it. But you know, right now they're on two different islands, and so they're trying to keep things separate. You don't see the Raw versus SmackDown attraction at WrestleMania, and rightfully so. You want to establish these leagues, these brands as separate entities, and you don't want to kind of mix and match too early. So I think they've been very disciplined, and that's something that gets overlooked. Is they could have gone there for WrestleMania, they did not. Will they ever go to Shane versus Triple H? If there's a way to do it. Neither guys are getting younger. In fact, seeing Shane take that, you know, just that backstage brawl yesterday, he goes 110%, always has, always will. But it's like, oof, hard to see him sometimes take some of those shots.
Right. Yeah. And here, I'll ask you a question. Was working at Wrestling Inc. in the 90s your best job?
Oh, hell yeah. Paid the best.
Nice. All right. Well, I know, you know, we got an interview with Tony Schiavone up. The final part was posted yesterday. Great guy. Yeah. It was such a fun interview. He's got the new podcast at MLW. I guess it's 7 episodes in now.
Yep. 7 episodes in, and it's been great to have Tony reconnect with wrestling. He grew up like us, a huge wrestling fan, and got to go into the business through the Crockett's. And, you know, if you have a rough patch on the job at some point, but circumstances lead it to be the last impression maybe that you left with the fans. And I think it was a negative way for him to leave the business. You know, just, it was tough for him. The WCW was falling. He even says he didn't care at a certain point, but you don't want to be remembered for that. And so for him to come back into the podcast and be, really, he's like Bob Saget. He's like the last guy you expect to drop all this crazy foul language. He has a great sense of humor, but he also has great insight from the Crockett days to his time at WWF to WCW during their peak. And so I think it's been great for him because it's allowed him to reconnect with the business, and it's been very positive and a great job. And that's a great show. It drops every Monday morning, 6:05 a.m. at MLWRadio.com. It's a really fun show. And I've learned stuff about guys like Goldberg I never knew, DDP, stuff that just it's not out there. And Tony has some really unique insight. And there's no politics for Tony because he's not looking for a job. He works for the Braves down in Georgia. And you get that uncut, uncensored take from someone that's been there for a long time.
Yeah. Well, great, Court. Thanks for joining us again. And where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Court Bauer, CourtBauer. And I'm also on Instagram. And hope to see everyone out at Wally Mania in 15 days, Thursday night, March 30th, at Tier Nightclub, downtown Orlando. Wally will perform. New Japan will be in the house. MVP will be in the house. Jim Ross will be in the house. Kevin Sullivan, the Taskmaster, talking old school WCW, will be in the house. The man behind WWE Creative-ish, the parody account, he'll be in the house. Dave Meltzer. It's a who's who. We haven't even announced everyone yet. I mean, it's crazy. Marty DeRose will be there. Sarah Shockey. It's a lot of fun, and a lot of surprises are coming your way if you go and check it out. MLW.com. Tickets start just $15. It's a hell of a deal.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, man. So Raj and I will be back Monday night with Mr. Matt Morgan to talk about Monday Night Raw. Raj, anything people should look for on the site before we take it home?
The final part of my interview with Josh Barnett will be coming up tomorrow. Tons of stuff. You know, WrestleMania season. It's just busy as hell right now. So keep checking us out.
Awesome. So until next time, everyone, I'm Glenn Rubenstein, and we'll see you back here on the Wrestling Inc. podcast. Take care.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.